Hello again, everyone, for Edge Magazine, for the Laugh Track podcast, and of course, for this YouTube page, youtube.com/Jerry Strauss. We've got a great conversation ahead of us here this time out. This is going to be a good one. I think one of those iconic people that we have enjoyed in so many different roles and so many different ways in the entertainment world over the years. And she's here, man. She's made time for us. Melora Hardin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm not nearly as busy as you. I'm not sure anyone on the planet is right now.
Woo, it's a lot. It's a lot.
That's great. That's great. And let's time stamp it real quick just to give people some perspective. We are recording this the day after the season premiere of Dancing with the Stars. Of course, your official televised debut as part of that cast for this season. How are you feeling?
I feel great. I mean, I'm exhausted, but I feel great. And it's like, you know, you just never stop going with this show. It's just go, go, go. And really, I haven't had a day off in 2 weeks. So I'm just kind of like, okay, so is that the pace? I guess that's the pace. And I'm trying to work that out and make sure that when I'm sitting down to eat something, I'm really like really taking my time to enjoy that, because that might be my part of my day off is my Stretch meal.
Good for you.
It's intense.
You know, it's a good segue. You know, we're talking about the subject of being good to go. That's actually the theme for this issue of Edge Magazine, where this conversation will be appearing in addition to this YouTube channel. And what I wanted to know from you is, you know, you've done so many things. How does Melora Hardin get into that mode of being good to go, ready to go when the camera's about to roll for an acting role, as opposed to what you're doing now, Dancing with the Stars? Is it a different mental process for you?
Yeah, it is. It's really different, actually, because Dancing with the Stars is really a spectacle. You know, it's a giant, giant show. And when you, you know, I had a sort of a big aha moment, you know, the night before that we do the camera blocking, you know, the night before, where they decide where the camera's going to go and what shots are going to be, because it's live television, which is really refreshing and different, something that's we don't get a lot these days. Sure. And so it's interesting because it's similar to theater in that you have to be on, like you have to be ready to go when they say go. And you know you're going to get the one time, and that's going to be that. Whereas with film and television, it's different in the sense that you have to be ready to go, but you also know that, like, you have time to finesse, and you have a place to go. And sometimes with film and television, because it's not like you do, like, rehearsals, rehearsal, 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 and then show, it's more like you kind of show up and you run through it two times or something, you know, depending on what you're doing. You run through it a couple times and it's out of order, and you know, and you have to kind of bring all of your skill sets to kind of prepare your emotional self where your character is in that moment in time and in the arc of the story and the arc of the evolution of the character. And I guess for me, the aha moment after camera blocking was like, oh, I'm just this tiny little thing existing in this giant universe of Dancing with the Stars, which is like this bright red backdrop with these, you know, pyrotechnics and glitter and lights. And it was just a whole different thing for me to have to figure out, how do I fill that space? Because as an actor, that's what we do. As actors, we're like all about, we have to come in and we fill the character and we fill the space. But in television and film, you can really communicate so much through your eyes. Sure. And you have lines, and sometimes you have songs, and you have, you know, you have scenes, and you have more than one scene to show people who the character is, for the most part, most of the time. So it's just like, here you have one moment, you have one chance, you have no lines, you have no songs, you have nothing to say. It's in this giant universe of like lights, you know, and explosions. and they're barely on you. They're barely on your face because they're watching your dancing. They're watching your body. So it's a much bigger, broader stroke that you have to make as a performer. Yeah. And that was like a big realization to me. Like it was like, wow, this is like the broadest comedy drama, you know. And I was doing the tango, which is a killer's dance. And so I was like, I think I've got to be like an assassin, but I think I'm like a ninja assassin. Like Artem was like, yeah, you're a ninja assassin. And I said, you know, when I teach masterclasses, I've taught masterclasses in like, you know, in acting and how to perform a song, that kind of thing. And I'll say to my students, like, you know, I want you to hit the ceiling. I want to see you hit the ceiling, because if you don't hit the ceiling, you never know. You know, it's always easy to come down from hitting the ceiling, but yeah. If you don't hit the ceiling, oh, sorry. You never really know, like, oh, I could have gone that 10% more. I could have gone 20% more. And you don't want to walk away from an audition or a performance and go, oh, shoot, there was more room to play. And I said to Artem, I think I haven't hit the ceiling yet. And this is the night before our performance. And he's like, yeah, he goes, you got to hit that ceiling. And he goes, in fact, just blow a hole right through it. So yeah. That's what I was, because there really isn't a ceiling there on Dancing with the Stars. So that was super interesting learning curve.
It's interesting that you had this revelation, because longtime fans of you know that this isn't really your first rodeo with the concept of dance. We remember you from the movie Lambada. We remember you from one of the Dirty Dancing movies as well. What is your relationship actually with dance? Like, when did that first come into your life?
Yeah, and Dirty Dancing wasn't the movie. It was the series. I played Baby in the series, which only lasted for 6 episodes. But my relationship to dance really is that when I was a little girl, my mom took me to see, I think, the Nutcracker or something, or Swan Lake. I don't remember which one, but, you know, I came out at intermission and I just was 5 and I just danced in the lobby like I was one of the ballerinas up there. And I begged and begged and begged for ballet classes. I mean, she probably got them for me the next day at the YMCA, you know? So I had like this little class that I went to, but every day I would wake up and say, Mommy, is it ballet day? Is it ballet day? So I think she realized I loved it. And then got me a better teacher, and then got me a better teacher from there. And I think as a child, you know, I started acting professionally at 6 and I started dancing at 5 and singing and writing songs from, you know, when I could remember. But I think I would have told you that acting and singing and all that were my hobbies and that I was going to be a ballerina. So in my mind, in my little girl mind, that was what I thought I was, you know, what I thought I was going to do. So I'm trying to kind of, I think Dancing with the Stars is sort of this wonderful opportunity to reawaken my little girl, you know, fantasy and dream, because it's the closest I'll ever come to, you know, being a ballerina. Because even when you dance on Broadway or you dance in, you know, in a lot of the things that I've danced in, not when I did Chicago on Broadway, because I was doing Fosse stuff and I'd never done Fosse, and that was really an incredible, wonderful, you know, challenge and exciting and beautiful and just great stuff to move into, great choreography. But really everything I've done on television has mostly been me being less of a dancer than I am. You know, I think I have a lot of, I have a lot of experience with people saying, I remember at The Office, them saying, could we make her a little less pretty? Could we make her, you know, I think they said that on 27 Dresses too. Can we just like put her hair back or something, or make her less pretty? Or can you dance, you know, less good? Can you, it's like, I feel like there's a lot of that, you know, just sort of like, let's take it down a notch, you know,
it's
like.
Stop being so perfect, Melora.
No, it's not about perfect, but it's just, it's like, this is maybe the first time. I do think Chicago was one of these as well, where you really get to just be like, bah! You know, you get to be like, this is everything I've got. Like, but it's my first time doing that, as I said, without the use and the ability to use my voice and writing, you know, calling on writing and calling on lights. And like, it's just like fascinating to, So anyway, I decided to vocalize my dance. If you watched my dance last night, I was making lots of noise because I felt I needed to bring my voice to it. And I also have a lot to say about that. We can get to that when we talk about the documentary.
Okay. Okay, great. Now, you know, you've already hit on the fact that you've got a pretty diverse career. You've kind of done all these different kinds of things. What I'd like to know is, and of course, we're talking about drama, comedy, singing, dancing, you name it. Is there something in your career that you feel maybe wasn't initially one of your big passions, one of your big focuses in your career, and you came to have an experience with it and learn to love it more than you ever thought?
Well, I would say directing. I mean, I've just started directing, and I never was setting out to direct. I just, that was not a thing I was setting out to do. And then it was suggested to me by a producer of a little movie that I did when I was in my mid-20s, a little small movie that I don't really think ever saw much of the light of day, but the director was kind of, it was really a movie about me and this little boy and a dog. And I think that, you know, I'd had so much experience as a child actor myself, and also working with animals as a child actor, mm-hmm. that this director, unfortunately, was just not good at directing kids and didn't have any idea how to communicate to a kid actor. So I stepped in a lot and sort of tried to help the kid understand what was needed and wanted. And the producer came in to me and said, you know, you have a really interesting combination of the velvet glove and an iron fist. You should direct. And I was like, really? And then after the movie, he took me out to, you know, drinks or dinner or something. He was such a nice man. And he just was like, really encouraged me. He just said, you really should do this. You should pursue this. And you're really, you really have the right mind. I'd love to find him, actually. I need to find that producer, because he really was the one that planted the seed. And so that was in my mid-20s. And then it kept kind of bubbling up. And that's another thing that Dancing with the Stars reminds me of, is when I was a little girl, I would put on shows with all of my friends in the neighborhood. And I would be the one that was telling everybody what to do. I got guys, you know, the boys who were like, you know, by the neighborhood kids, I got them to like, you know, hang curtains and lift me. And, you know, I mean, really, I might've even gotten them to wear tights for all I know. I mean, I really got these boys and girls, but like committed and in, and I was telling everyone, you're going to come in there and then you're going to say that, and you're going to do this and I'm going to do that, and you're going to lift me here and we're going to sing that. You know, so I guess I was directing then, but I also I had the show in me, you know, and I think Dancing with the Stars is also really feeding that. Also that part of my childhood. So yeah, I think directing, you know, and then doing, actually directing, you know, it what I think I love about it is that it really does require everything that I have to bring. And I think the dancer in me likes to feel used. I like to feel like I have been utilized, like you require and request and need everything I have to give. It's just who I am. I like to give 150% when I decide to do something. And that's what directing is like. Directing is like, just like everything's pinging all the time. You know, it's like there's, you know, that guy over there and that's doing that, and the actor's doing that, and the producer there needs that, and the thing, and you're just like, you know, you just everything. And then how do I, in the time, that scene that we just did a minute ago, we're about to go into this one. It's fascinating brain work that turns me on in a way I didn't expect, I guess, or I was kind of like wondering about. So yeah, that was a long answer to that question. But it was a good question. It was a good question.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, we have to talk a little bit about The Office. And I'd imagine there's not a day that goes by that you are not reminded or recognized of the fact that you are indeed Jan Levinson, one of the most iconic characters in TV history, honestly. I want to ask you, and this is particularly interesting with perhaps that mindset of digging deeper into things that a director has to have. The thing I find most interesting about Jan Levinson, for those who are fans of The Office, is that she very well easily, on any other show, any other situation, could have just been like this evil witch of a character. But what I see is someone who is never driven by pure malice, never driven by a pure mental desire to screw with anybody or to do wrong. She's messed up in some ways, you might say. She's not a bad person, but what we see is a bad relationship between her and Michael unfold because they're just simply bad, in bad places perhaps in life, and bad for each other. From your perspective, crafting that character, were you conscious of kind of walking that line and creating a Jan that we weren't going to hate? We were just going to kind of cringe at and see what she does next.
Well, first of all, I love that you can see into all those layers, because I always defend her because you know, sometimes some people will just say like, she's a bitch, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, she's not, you know, she's really not. But that's okay. I'm the actor that plays her, so of course I have empathy for all my characters. You know, when I play a murderer, I have to find the inner struggle that makes that person murder those people in that movie. You know, sure. That's what my job is. So I have to have empathy for my characters. And I really think that's what you're reading. You're reading that I love Jan Levinson because I love her. And because I understand her, yeah. You kind of love her and understand her because, I don't know that I was trying to walk that line that you talk about, but I think I was just sort of aware that was how I experience her. That's how I find her, and to me she was always very complex from the minute I spoke, you know, I said the first line as Jan Levinson. She was complex, and so that maybe is just the lucky combination of the writing of Jan and me playing her. You know?
Oh, I mean, it was great. It's why we continue, you know, we talk about the character of Michael Scott, but Michael Scott needed a Jan Levinson was equally as complex as he was. Now, I have to ask you something, and this is going to make me a hero to the most ardent Office fans. I think this is going to be a game-changing revelation here, because one of the biggest mysteries in the history of The Office took place on one of the most famous episodes of The Office, The Dinner Party. That's where this was really honed in on. Where we learn about the musical career of Jan Levinson's assistant, Hunter. And we hear some of the song that he had written. Lots of speculation about the meaning of that song. So I think a lot of people involved in creative would have mysterious different opinions as to exactly whether that song was based in reality. But who better to ask than Melora Hardin? What's your fan fiction theory on what went down? Do you create sort of that backdrop in your head when you're doing this episode to try to kind of create a backstory for yourself, if you will?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think for sure Jan showed Hunter some of the ropes in the bedroom.
I think that's what, you know, I'm sure there's many, if we Google it, I'm sure there's lots of very detailed creepy stories out there about that very flashback scene that never actually existed, Just nice to know.
but I think she did it very consciously. Like, I don't think it was just like an accident. I think she chose him and decided, I'm gonna do that to help this young man grow. I think she wanted to help him become the man that she felt he could be. And she obviously needed something too. I think that she needed the attention from, you know, that he was giving her. And like, just, I just sort of see him as like just sort of like in awe of her the whole time. I think he's just like, yeah. oh my God. Mm-hmm. And she's probably doing everything. She's doing everything and he's just laying there like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. How did I get so lucky?
And then the next day he picked up a guitar.
Right. So inspired. Yeah. Oh my God. So funny.
So this is going to be a heck of a segue. We're going to switch to a more recent role that a lot of people loved you in. Of course, The Bold Type, 5 seasons, a beloved show, to say the least, in its own right, entirely separately from The Office. But what do you most look back on fondly about when you think about your time on The Bold Type and the experience of being a part of that show?
Well, I mean, I really did that show coming off of Transparent and just the goodness that Transparent did in the world for the trans community. And it was just so heartening because I sort of interacted with so many trans people on that show that I'd never spent time with trans people. And certainly the way that, the LGBTQ, culture was wrapped into this beautiful family story, and the challenges of, being an older person who was living in shame around who he truly felt he was. Yeah. That's Pfefferman, the main character of the show. And I think I just felt like this is so beautiful to do entertainment that's great entertainment, but is also doing good in the world, and maybe bringing compassion to an audience that wouldn't otherwise have any door in to getting compassion in that way. Because I've always felt like prejudice really is. I think I heard someone say something about prejudice is just not being educated, and it's not having you just if you have a personal relationship with someone, you know there's just no way to be prejudiced, really, and it's like I saw that, we all have that in our families in different ways, like people, uncles or aunts or whatever, and you meet people in your family and you're like, I think that person's kind of prejudiced. And we all have prejudices in this. We're all finding that more and more, with Black Lives Matter and like the things that come out, you have to really examine, like even little prejudices where we go, oh gosh, I didn't even realize that I need to be accountable for that. And so I guess like just the fact that Transparent was sort of bringing this beautiful family story into an hilarious family story and heart-wrenching family story into living rooms, and people were watching it and confronting maybe some of their own prejudices. I thought that's what I want to do next. I want to do something that does good in the world. And then Jacqueline Carlisle, fell into my lap, and I really felt like there was something really powerful about a woman boss who is kind and who has integrity and who doesn't cut her young employees off at the knees all the time, and who supports them and mentors them and challenges them for sure. And she's definitely a force to be reckoned with, but she's also, she's kind and she's reasonable and she's fair. Yeah. And that's what I see around me more often than not. The women that I interact with are like that. And they're balancing many, many balls at one time. They've got families and relationships and friendships and hobbies and careers and big careers, and their bosses and CEOs and I just, that's the thing I'm most proud of about The Bold Type. I get women coming up to me, young women, older women, all saying like, just what a profound thing it is for them. And I'm really relating it to Transparent, because it's the same thing as, I remember when Ellen on her, her TV series, when she had that first kiss, sure. That was like the first time people got to see that. I even had somebody say to me, if I had seen Tammy Cashman, which was the character I played on Transparent, if I had seen Tammy Cashman on television, when I was a young girl, I would have known I was gay because I would have been attracted to Tammy Cashman. And this woman had been living her life as, you know, a heterosexual person for years and not really knowing why it wasn't working. And ultimately, you know, did end up having, you know, a lovely, you know, wife and yeah. got married and all that and kids and things. But like, it's just sort of, it's sort of great when you can, when your character can be something that can be like, oh, I recognize myself in that. And with Jacqueline Carlisle, it's like, not just do you recognize yourself in that, but you aspire to that. I want young women, and a lot of women said, I want to be a boss like that, or I want a boss like that. So that if they have a boss that isn't like that or something like that, they can go, I think that is wrong. I think that isn't right to have a boss that is mean and vindictive and, you know, right. conniving. I want them to have that example, that mirror of like, no, you're right. Your instincts are right. That should be the way it is. Doesn't have to be, you know, exactly like that, but needs to feel good.
That's really awesome. And it, you know, it's clear when you look at your career path, you just continue to gravitate towards doing things that are putting good out into the world in one way or another, which is just so cool to be, you know, to be in a position where you can find these opportunities to do that. Toward that end, I want to ask you about another project that you have coming up. And this is really along the same lines as far as just really something that's going to, you know, just going to be a great project to help a lot of people, Thunder, Hunter, and Me. Tell us about the docuseries and how you got involved and what we can expect from it.
Yes. Well, it is one of those weird things where I certainly never sat up in bed and thought, I want to be a documentary filmmaker. I mean, that just never crossed my mind ever, I don't think. And then, you know, this person came into my life. It's a story. It basically, I was 10 years old on a series. I'd said to my mom 2 weeks before, you know what I really want to do is a show about a horse. And then I got this series called Thunder about a wild black stallion that came rushing out of the forest when I would whistle, and I would jump on his back, you know, bareback, and we would go and save people. We would pull people out of wells. We'd pull animals' legs out of traps. Yeah. And
life as a kid too, by the way.
Save the day. Yeah, save exactly. Day. Yeah. I mean, Cindy Prescott was the character I played on Thunder, and she was a real heroine, you know, a little girl heroine with Thunder. And so flash forward to 40 years later, one of my really good friends, Paula Cole, singer-songwriter, she asked me to direct her 20th anniversary of one of her big hits, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone, music video. And so I said, great. Well, you know, that the music video from the 90s was very abstract, and it's a great story song, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone. So I want to do a video that really encompasses that story. So I need a horse. And I asked my producer, do you know anyone who lives in town who has a horse? He says, oh, I do. I know this one woman. And so I go over, I walk through her door, and she goes, oh my God, you're Cindy Prescott. You were on Thunder. You were on my favorite show when I was 10 years old.
Oh,
I can't even, like, she had never seen The Office. She'd never seen Transparent. She'd never seen Monk. She'd never seen anything I've ever been in, but she recognized me from Thunder, and I've never had anyone recognize me from Thunder. and it was just the sweetest, cutest, sweetest thing. And she's like, I wrote you a fan letter and you wrote me back. And I asked you how to get in commercials and TV, and you told me in your 10-year-old handwriting. Oh. And now I feel like I wanted to be the little girl with the horse, like you and Cindy Prescott. And now I am the girl with the horse. She has 47 actor animals. And, you know, so I, needless to say, end up using her animals for the music video. We end up working together. Her animals are incredible. She's incredible. She's just one of those people. You want people on sets who can solve problems, make things work, you know, and that's what she was like. She was just lovely.
Right.
And I looked around and I thought, you're so cool. Like, where's your... I said, you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend? Or it's like, where's your partner? You're so amazing. She's like, oh no, I've never been on a date. I've never kissed anyone.
Hmm.
I'm like, how old are you? She goes, I'm 50. And I said, you're 50. Were you raised in a religious family or like something. Why not? Because she's beautiful. She's fabulous. She's a bright light, you know. And she goes, well, I think I'm ready. And, you know, maybe I'll do that now. And I'm like, okay, well, I fancy myself a matchmaker. So if you have any questions, like, call me. I'd love to help you out, you know. So about 6 weeks later, she calls me and she says, how long is too long of a hug? And what is spooning? And I realize I'm trying to grow the questions up and I can't. And ultimately, it inspires me to ask a question I've never asked anyone in my life, which is there any chance that you were raped? And she says, there was that time in the park when I was 7 years old. And I literally drive to her house and take her under my wing and open my world to her. I think the Thunder connection. And so it really is a story about it took 40 years, but Cindy and Thunder finally came to help. And that's really the story. That's the story of the series. It's about transformation. It's about healing. It's about what it really, really takes to transform trauma. I'd say 85% to 90% of the movie is completely self-filmed. It's just the two of us because we didn't know we were making a documentary. It's just that I had the very good instinct to pick up the camera, and I'm really grateful I did. And I did that because I was watching her transform in the moment so remarkably fast that I was like, I need to document this for her because she was in a complete incident of like calling for me. It's so crazy because I called for Thunder in Thunder. Thunder would come. I feel like she called for me and I answered that call. And then now I feel called to sort of extend the healing out into the world beyond our personal story, which is what we did together. That obviously transformed and changed her life, but it changed my life too. And that's what I meant when I was talking about the voice thing, because part of my tango yesterday was realizing that it's possible that I could inspire people to feel fierce the way the tango is fierce. I want to give women and men that inspiration to be able to be fierce, to be able to be, to really that when enough is enough, and that they can go into their own transformation and the hard work of that, because it's really hard work. And you see that in the series, but you also see a lot of love and a lot of light and a lot of so to me it's like a roadmap of a suggestion of how others, an invitation for how others might do their own healing.
That's amazing. And it's amazing how, again, you're using really every platform you have in different ways to bring that love and that light into the world in some way, shape, or form. Melora, it's been so great to have you on. It's been so great to talk to you. And, you know, I can't wait to get this out into the world. I want to ask you one last thing. You know, we're still obviously in the beginning of Dancing with the Stars season, and that's got to be all encompassing in your life right now. What does your life look like now? I mean, we talked a little bit about this crazy 2-week boot camp type prep just to get to this point. But now, Where do you go from here as far as the schedule of just, you know, on to the next one, getting ready for the next dance?
Yeah, well, we did the first dance last night. Nice. After this interview, I'm going to eat something, and then I have to go to Dancing with the Stars to do the interview that we do every week about our last dance. Then I have to go straight from there to my rehearsal, learning the new dance for next Monday night. So I'll be doing that till about, you know, 7 tonight. And then I'll come home and have dinner and I'll go to bed. And in the meantime, we're still trying to find a home for Thunder Hunter and me. So I'm working with my partners at Revelations Entertainment, which is Morgan Freeman's company. And we're trying to find, you know, a home for this and where it's going to exist. And so that's all being, you know, and have a little FaceTime with my daughters. You know, I've got one in New York and one in Italy studying, both studying. So, you know, try to stay in touch there and give them what they need, even though they're both wonderful and thriving and independent and doing their thing. And show up for my husband however he needs me to, and my animals and my fish and my friends.
Well, listen, what I wish for you is that after a hard day today, it sounds like an extremely busy day today, I want you to take at least a half an hour, sit back, relax, have a glass of wine if you feel like it, and maybe put on that one night song from Hunter.
just to have a good laugh. Yeah. Or just to have that weird, awkward dance in my body again.
If you do that and you put it on video and put it on social media, I guarantee it goes viral in about an hour.
I better wear a red blouse for that. I think people would really like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Melora, thank you so much again. Good luck this week, next week, beyond, hopefully well beyond on Dancing with the Stars. Good luck with the documentary and everything else you have going on.
Thank you. You're so sweet. This was a wonderful interview. It's really nice when people ask different questions and, you know, and just sort of go in different places. It was fun. And thank you for letting me ramble. I'm a bit of a rambler. I'm sorry. My answers to your questions are like super long. You're probably gonna have to cut half of this out.
No. No time limits on YouTube. That's what we're here for.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
So we're good. But thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you. All right.
Have a great night.
You too.